in one age, called the Third Age by some.
An age yet to come.
An age long past.
A wind rose on the Geek at Arms podcast.
The wind was not the beginning.
There are neither beginnings
nor endings to the turning of the Wheel of Time.
But it was a beginning.
Welcome to Woolheads, a Wheel of Time podcast by Geek at Arms. I'm Brian, and here's a man that I think surely must be Taveren. It's James.
The light illumine you, Brian.
And you as well, James.
What price would you pay to protect your child, or to reclaim a lost love? What would tempt you to cross the line and join Team Dark One? This question comes up a lot in Damani, Wheel of Time Season 2, Episode 5. If this is your first time with us, beware. There are spoilers a-coming, and not just for this episode.
I feel like that a lot of what you said could go on a t-shirt for the Dark Forces. We joined the Dark One. We have cookies and not dead children.
Right. We've had some listener feedback, and although our format precludes getting too deep into it, I would like to thank Patrick for his comments. He points out that in the novel, the Shamael definitely exhibited some physical invulnerability, or at least the ability to heal completely from fatal injuries. And he drew our attention to evidence that Lanfear was in fact channeling the true power when Moraine cut her throat, which I had definitely missed. It is way more obvious that she was doing so in this episode, though, which leads us into production.
So I will say that one of the very first shots that we see is, well, the first one we get is the Xianxian ships, which are almost exactly like how I envisioned them to be.
The shot they had square sails.
Yeah, that was a little bit like the folding sails that they showed instead of just being brought down on a rigging arm. They kind of fold, kind of like some shades do in people's houses. But I mean, the show is not required to have their ships fit with my mental image, but I enjoyed that they were pretty close. But we go from
they do look awesome.
They do look awesome, and we go to Celine lying in a pool of her own blood. I thought it was really cool that, and I don't know if this was I'm getting to guess that this was some type of practical effect instead of a digital one, that she's twitching. You see her eyes begin to move, and the blood is still pumping out of her neck. It is gross, and it was a cool effect.
Yeah, they definitely had some space in there to put some tubes to push that out, so I think it probably was practical.
Which I applaud them for doing. Anyone who takes the effort to do it a practical effect in this age of digital wizardry will earn a little applause from me.
To a point, Elias's contact was wandering off of his pupil in a couple of shots.
Oh, like,
that would have been really. I have fixed that exact problem before in the past. It's like that would take like hour and a half per shot fix. But the channeling effect, or where I was headed.
Yes, where you begin to see the black spots begin to move across her eyes, and this dark channeling. I was watching that. I had a little intake of breath because I remembered what it was she was doing. She's channeling what the Dark Friends call, was it the true power?
Yes. And I love that tentacular appearance. It was pleasingly similar to Mishadar, although I admit I didn't care for that effect at the time, but with this, that it just looked creepy and cool. I liked it a lot.
There were a lot of creepy elements in this episode, and frankly, I kind of dug them, because when you're dealing with such people as the Forsaken, that element can appear at any moment. Especially with how twisted and macabre many of their little group is.
Yeah, it was creepy and it was brutal, but it wasn't gruesome the way Uno's death was.
Yeah, true.
Like her exploding that guy's head is like, because it was so backlit and kind of flat lighting, like, oh gosh, that guy's head just exploded. We didn't have to see brain matter or anything.
Yeah, well, actually, on the gentleman on the horse, I didn't think his head exploded. Is that she used a weave to like just slice his head off? Because she
blew it up. I went back and watched it again.
Oh, she did. She just, because the way she twisted, I thought like she just sliced him off at the neck. But no, she really blew it up.
Yeah, his head just vanished, and there was a spray of just dark droplets everywhere.
As I make this joke a lot, but his brain literally became a veneer.
Yeah, he did the scanners thing.
Well, speaking of creepy, the a little later, I thought the woman who Moraine quite ruthlessly left out as bait. I'm like, well, she's about to have the worst headache in the history of ever. No, she sews her mouth shut. Oh, I was like, oh, this is horrible. I can't look away. That's a cool effect, though.
Yeah. I wish that they had told the actress exactly what was going to happen, because I don't think she knew what the effect was going to be.
And that's why, even with it being sewn, she was still opening her mouth a bit.
Well, I would have expected, you know, oh, something is happening to my lips. I'd have been moving my hands up there and trying to get at it. But and she puts her hands on her cheeks. I don't think they told her what was going to happen.
They may have tried to explain. She just didn't get it. And
that could be.
Yeah.
Or maybe they hadn't decided yet.
That's a good point.
Look, that happens
just
a lot.
Just do a facial expression that you think something horrible is happening and we'll fix it in post.
Right. But the effect itself was really cool looking.
I agree.
And again, not gruesome. I wouldn't have wanted to see like blood running down her lips or anything.
In the books, it would have been a very forsaken thing to excuse this. It is a bit gruesome. It would have been a very forsaken thing to just take her tongue out. And I'm glad we did not see that.
Very much. Other weaving effects that I really liked. I love that we're getting this through line of Egwene weaving without her hands.
I missed that.
Yeah, because her hands are tied when the Seanfeon are taking her, but she still manages to reflect one of the Damani's attacks.
You're right.
And that started all the way back through her first encounter with Balda, and then later when she's having lessons with Alana, and Alana says, well, you know, you have two hands, you should use them. She says, "That I'm not here to do it the easy way." I hope they keep paying that off, because it's a really nice touch.
I will admit, in the lesson with Alana, I thought she was just exhibiting good old Two Rivers stubbornness.
I'm sure there was that, too. But it gives her an ability that not all Aes Sedai have.
Yes. I'm going to skip forward a little bit, but once again, we are treated to a very dynamic fight scene in this episode. And once again, it involves an Aiel. I really enjoyed that, one, the head of the White Cloaks didn't forget this whole honorable one-on-one junk. No, everyone attack at once or she's going to kill us. As someone who has fought in melees in the SCA, I can tell you right now, I have watched as there's been like 6 to 10 on my side and one person left on the other side. And that person calls honorable combat and our leader will go, sure. And then that one person suddenly turns into the main character and just starts picking us off one by one. No, forget that. Everyone mob and just straight up brutalize him. And that's what he tells them to do, because he said before, it took how many of
and
your
it
brothers?
Still doesn't work.
It still doesn't work. It took how many of your brothers to take away her spears and how many more to put her in the cage? So she, though, does exactly what the only chance someone in her position would have. She is the superior fighter, but she is up against superior numbers who are armed, and here's the most important thing, armored.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't play their game. And that's a very important lesson for real fighting as well. You are not required to play the way the other person is playing. And the point of the fighting is to beat the other person. It's most important for you to go first. The other person doesn't get a turn.
Right.
And she does that from the get-go. She is constantly on the move. And I watched this fight a couple of times. She's not aiming for the armored points, as you would see in many heroic epics of the lone hero taking on the faceless hordes of bad guys, of the disposable bad guy army. She's aiming for the weak points. She's
going for the joints.
She's going for the joints. She's precisely aiming for the unarmored areas. She's breaking arms, limbs, legs, necks when she can. But she's staying constantly in movement and not letting anyone truly get behind her or gang up on her. And she's fast, she's quick, she's agile. And it also helps that she's got a big blacksmith swinging a hammer for the first time.
Although
we'll talk about that later.
A closer look, I think it was still actually an axe.
Yeah.
He was using it like his hammer, though.
Well, there was one time where it was adorable. Most of the focus was on the Aiel, of course. But off to the side, there's one of the Children of Light holding up his sword and a block against Perrin. And Perrin's swinging what looks to be about an 8 to 10 pound sledgehammer and just blows through it. Just clobbers the guy. I'm like, yep. Yeah, you are holding up a small short sword against a blacksmith swinging a 10 pound hammer. Your forearm, wrist, and probably collarbone are dust.
Mm-hmm.
So, very fun fight. I absolutely found it believable that those two could take on a small platoon of Children of the Light.
And we get yet another prominent axe. Perrin's still not swinging it.
And he had absolutely every reason to take it with him.
I know. I hope he finds a way to steal it eventually. It's so high fantasy. I like it.
I know. I paused the show after the scene of he and the IO lady running away. Because I saw him like, is he holding the axe? He's not holding the axe. I just need a moment. Just throwing my hands up in the air. Anyway. It did not take away from the fight at all, though.
No.
And I also really enjoy the camera work of this show in many places. They really had some great camera work in this fight scene. And juxtaposed from that, there was a beautiful moment with the camera when Moraine and Rand are back in Carrion. It took me a moment to realize that that's where they had gone back to. It's like, where are they? Oh, there's some people, highfalutin looking people in blue. They're in Carrion. Okay. You can tell they're exhausted. And Moraine has gone up to clean herself up, and not quite the bath scene that we were all expecting, but she is
sponge bath,
yeah. And she walks into her room, and the focus goes away from her over to her bed, almost as if it's a suggestion, saying, is that where you're going to go next? And it, as if she knows where we're looking, she looks over at it too, and you could just feel the exhaustion exuding from her. And I thought that was well done. I needed to make notice of that. I really liked how they did that.
Yeah, since we're here in Carrion, I thought I'd mention Moraine's hair is amazing. She'd pass for an Alderaanian.
That's a very good point. I hadn't thought of that before. She would.
I just really noticed it in that particular scene. Costuming later on was a little questionable. It looked like she and Rand were going to go to a modern opera.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute in my Coplin talk.
Yeah. Not sure how. Apparently, Barthanas and Rand have the same size shoe.
Oh.
But I did like her before she changed clothes, that shoulder rig she was wearing over her traveling clothes.
I did like that as well. Easy access for the knife. I would love it if we got a replica of her knife, if someone made that. It's a very cool looking knife.
I'm sure that will happen at some point.
Yeah. Moraine Organa. I could picture that. We've brought up a couple of things that belong in Coplin Talk. Shall we head there?
Let's. Because I've got like 3 pages of notes, and I'm not going to get to all of it, I know, so got it off at the knees.
Kicking off at the beginning. Okay. The Forsaken are hardier than we first thought. They are dang near immortal, can take a lot of damage. You know, though, she's bleeding out on the floor. You have a sword.
Finish her off.
At this point, literally, she should have just channeled a different series and gone, there can be only one, and taken her head. Because Forsaken or not, the quote-unquote true power or not, she's not walking that off.
Yeah, well, they do still have that 3,000 years of legend and scariness, and even Moraine's not immune to that.
Fair. I mean, when you're coming up against literal legends, it's hard to know when to fight and when to cut and run.
And besides, you don't really want to take out your major baddie that early in the show.
I know we need her for the rest, but practically, you know, common sense-wise, take the head. Moving on. as I said before, finally, Perrin holds a hammer. We're only in episode what of season two?
Five.
And he finally gets a chance for a cool-looking axe.
Two axes. Perrin's touched neither of them.
And just walks away from it. Honestly, I thought he was going to get this one because
I did too.
The camera made a point of almost focusing in on the intricate detail on the axe. I'm like, okay, it's cool. It's got a long haft, double bladed, neat. It's coming from Bornhold, which would be even more poetic if he took it from him. But no, he's just walking away. Got my fists. We do get our first look at a Fremen. I'm sorry, I mean an Aiel.
Right?
No.
We've wrapped Avienda and Gaul into the same character.
Mm-hmm. The accent is what's throwing me off. I know she's supposed to come from the Wastes, but I heard her and I instantly thought of the way the Fremen talk in the latest Dune movie. And
the dreadlocks didn't help at all either.
Not a single bit. I mean, I probably wouldn't have even bothered me if her eyes had been glowing blue.
I would have been bothered by that.
So, yeah, we get our Fremen, and it's, of all people, Avienda, who might be more important later. I did like the fact that we got some information about the Aiel from her, and they very easily could have done this in an expository way, but the way that she just conversationally explains things to Perrin, I really enjoyed. The conversation between them felt very real. Especially when it's like, I have tow towards you. It's like, you saved my life. My water is your water. And then he gets this really uncomfortable look. He's like, oh, well, there's no need for that. She's like, don't worry. I'm not going to assault you lustfully.
I thought that was a nice bit.
I agree. It just that showed
peculiar humor that people have.
The peculiar humor of the Aiel, and also how Perrin's still just kind of a small town guy. You'll have more, but my last Copland talk was the fashion, the Carian fashion that Moraine and especially Rand wore in those last scenes. I mean, I'm like, okay, dude, you're looking sharp. Did those clothes come from the famed Carian designer Calvin Kleinisch?
I did like the detailing on his collar. It was subtle, but it was nice looking.
I must have missed that.
It was the same color because it was like silver thread on white, and so it was kind of hard to see, except it popped the light a couple of times, and so I focused in on it.
Gotcha.
Because I didn't want to look at his vest anymore because it's like, oh. Where did you get blacks?
I think I got those same slacks at Sears. I'm like, I know that Carian is supposed to be like the most political city and one of the richest and also a place where this is one of the places where fashion comes from. Okay. This is one of the places that sets the trends, but can we please steer away from making it look a little too contemporary?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's just my thoughts.
I did have just a couple more. I'm just going to say just one more in the Calvin talk.
Okay.
Varen's conversation with Yasika after her talk with Shiriam, I thought was confusing.
Okay.
She makes a point. I've got this eidetic memory, so I remember everything that was in the book. And then she pulls out a page. Did she copy the page?
Yeah. Like, is she also an artist that she can just Xerox a page from memory?
I thought, did she do that with the one power somehow? And if so, why bother with the eidetic memory bit? I just found that whole thing a little bewildering. I kind of liked the...
She has a snapshot weave.
Did Shiriam lie? No, she didn't lie. No, she did. Oh, wait, she was compelled. I kind of like that back and forth in my brain. But then the thing with the paper distracted me so much that I kind of lost it.
It's this new weave I've learned. It's called a Polaroid.
But on with some changes that I do like. I like this sympathetic version of Bornhold.
Yeah.
I think it's going to make his turn toward raving lunatic all the more dramatic and disturbing.
I know, right? Especially, you know, when you remember who his daddy is.
And it gives us the idea that not all of the children of the light are Valda.
Yeah. Who I love what they've done with the character of Valda in this show. He is absolutely terrifying.
Yes,
props,
he is.
Props to the actor for making him so.
So I'm 100% now on that he and Carradine have been combined, because now that he's here on Elmeth Plain, they're definitely the same character.
Yeah.
And yeah, totally spooky.
But also, speaking of Varen and her Brown sisters, I love the idea of Browns getting together in a library, reading ancient tomes, and getting drunk together. I absolutely love this idea, and it feels so real. Of all of the Ajahs, especially the ones that believe in research and logic and knowledge, the Browns struck me as the most teacher-like of all of them. And let me tell you, in all my years, I have known soldiers, bikers, firefighters, cops, sailors. Now, elementary school teachers can outdrink them all. You've never known a true drinker until you see on a Friday night a bunch of aunt or grandmotherly looking elementary school teachers in flower print dresses heading into a Chili's or an On the Border to head to the bar because it's margarita night and they've had a week.
I believe that.
And that's what the Browns kind of reminded me of right then. I'm like, just reading ancient scrolls 1,000 years old and drinking straight from the bottle. I love the Browns.
Yeah, that surprised me. She popped the cork and just tilt the bag. Like, oh, no cup, goblet, and okay, there you go.
Not for these gals. Yeah, Varen is very quickly turning into just about my favorite Aes Sedai.
She always was my favorite. So it's just reinforcing her for me.
Yeah. Mira Sial is the actress's name, I believe, who plays her.
Oh.
She's just knocking it out of the park.
Mm-hmm.
Bringing more depth to the character than I even imagined.
And she's so appealing on the screen.
Yes.
Just, I enjoy watching her at her. She's warm. She just really draws me in.
I agree completely.
Someone who doesn't do that, though, is, of course, Leandrin.
Right.
The writers are continuing to deepen her character, and I really do like that. She, even though she was the most well-developed of the Black Ajah Cabal in the books, she was still pretty flat.
Yeah.
This version is not somebody to care about, but she's a little more comprehensible, and she offers us that tempting question, what price is too dear to save a loved one?
Mm-hmm.
The interchange with Suroth was pretty entertaining, too, that she's leaving and she frees Nynaeve, and you think, oh, well, maybe she's still trying to manipulate Nynaeve, but no, I think it's just spite towards Suroth.
This is purely spitting Suroth in the eye. I mean,
it's... this one. What happened?
Yeah, this is exactly the type of pride that Leandrin is known for, and it's very typical of her. Just, fine, you got the last word in? Well, fine, I'm going to get the last everything in. I honestly think if Suroth had kept her mouth shut a little more, which honestly is impossible,
right,
then Leandrin would have not have done that. But we get what we get.
We
needed it so that just Egwene was captured. And Nynaeve and...
Suroth was whipping off to a Shawmail. I mean,
seriously.
So perfectly encapsulated the Shauntaun arrogance about... Mm-hmm. Their bloodlines, like, you're not even of the blood. You may be 3,000 years old and the Dark One's chosen, but you're not noble.
Yep. She's lucky her fingernails are the only thing she lost.
No kidding.
Which I was wondering are the fingernails actually are they actually that long, or was the finger pointers just an affectation? I still don't know.
I think they exaggerated it in the show. From the description of the book, I always imagine them as maybe a few inches at most, and always painted in bright colors.
Mm-hmm.
As I don't know for sure that they weren't that long. I have to keep reading and find out. But in any case, the mounting hardware is really obvious. I mean, I know they tried to fix it by making it ornate, like, oh, no, it's just decorated. But it just draws more attention to the fact that these things are just tied to their fingers. Well, shall we move into theory crafting? We're going kind of long.
I just have a couple of last points I want to make on
sure.
Patterns. One, I would love to see a spinoff series of those sassy Damodred sisters.
I really did enjoy her interaction with her family.
Yeah.
It's just Just slight relaxation.
An unforeseen gift and something that really was not in the books and is 100% the show writers. But this time I'm okay with it because it adds some depth to Moraine's character and provides more background, not just for her, but also for the country as well. I talked about how much I love Varen. I love how Leandrin. She comes back to the tower and it's like, oh, I was in this very specific place. Here, look, I have specific vegetables that can only be found there this time of year. And, you know, Varen listening.
Says, oh, how convenient how for convenient. You.
Yeah, I love absolutely nothing is getting past her. And she's not buying a single bit of it. Just such a good scene. And finally, again, back to Moraine. Rosamund Pike. Proving once again how good she is. That final conversation with her sister, when her sister just gives her back the advice that that Moraine gave her decades ago, and this look of just realization on her face, and stark realization, and maybe even a twinge of hope. Nah, so much was said with no words, just in her face and her eyes. I'm like, well done, well done.
Did you catch that look that she gave Rand when Anvera says, oh, we've met?
Yeah. Like, what's all this then? Oh, but yes, let's head to future casting. Wrap this up.
Well, we've been talking about Moraine and the Damodreds. There's a wedding coming up. And since we're no longer running away from Kyrian like Moraine wanted to at start, I think we're probably going to go there. So
yeah,
maybe another chance for Tom. Maybe.
I think this could also very well be where we get our first look at the Queen Mother Morghese and her son.
Could be.
Gawain, because it's a royal wedding. You know she's going to be invited.
Yeah, and Gawain was name dropped in the episode.
Yep. So, yeah, going to stay there a little longer. But as for all the others, all roads lead to Falm.
And I know that Rand and Matt are going to get there eventually. So maybe I wonder if they're still going to do the Waygate out of Kyrian. And if so, in the books, that was in Barthanas's manor, which means did Moraine grow up with the thing in her backyard? Is that maybe that's why she knew how to use it?
That is very possible because it was shown in this episode that you don't need an Ogier to access the ways. Apparently, you just need. The one power.
I still wish that they had done the ways with an actual door that Boyle could open on his own.
Yeah, me too.
I think that's going to complicate things in other areas. And I'm still wondering, okay, so how are the Trollocs moving around? They must have... Surely Ashamiel is not running around moving them himself.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe he is. Who knows? And I still think that the effects... on the Waygate, the stone vines suddenly start looking like they're alive would have been so cool.
I agree. But, you know, the effects budget can only include so much. I mean, it's not like this show's being made by Amazon. Oh, wait. I would love to see Tom. Unfortunately, we're not going to get it this season.
Well, I continue to hold out hope that they're just pulling an Abrams.
I do, too.
No,
yeah.
It's totally not Khan in the next Star Trek movie.
Tell you what I would like to see. I'd like to see more of Matt in the next couple of episodes. This was a Matt-free episode.
Yeah, that was a disappointing. I didn't even think about it.
There was no Matt, and there was no Lan either. Mm-hmm. Come on now. No Matt, no Lan, and Perrin still doesn't have an axe.
And Loyal had no lines.
Now y'all just messing with me.
Hopefully we'll get lots more Matt next time.
Hope springs eternal. I think that will wrap it up for us.
All right. Well, the light shine on you, and may you shelter in the palm of the Creator's hand.